Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to Law Talk on a soggy Saturday, similar to the one that we had last week. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association, and we'll be hosting this Saturday afternoon legal get-together right up until 4 o'clock today. So we're going to be delighted if you will share with us your legal concern, your legal issue, and we'll try to dispense some advice, some information that's going to be helpful with you in finding your way through that thicket of laws and rules and regulations that are out there. We've got a guest today who's got a topic that I think is one of the most important ones that we can discuss in terms of providing a service to our community. Everybody is aware of the great role that motor vehicles play in modern society, and our guest, Attorney Dan Blinn, is an expert in consumer law, especially as it pertains to motor vehicles. So Dan is a founding member of the Consumer Law Group in Rocky Hill, Connecticut, where he practices. He is a graduate of Bowling Green University, New York University Law School. He has been very active in the Connecticut Bar Association, chairs its Consumer Law Group. He's been active on a national level and is a former board member of the National Association of Consumer Advocates. He has been a guest before, and he has added immensely to our ability to help out our listeners with their legal issues, especially on these topics of consumer rights. So, Dan, welcome back to Law Talk.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
Dan, always glad to have you back here. Let me just let our listeners know that we're here only until 4 o'clock, and while we've got a lot of things to talk about, we've got a lot of things to share with you. If you've got a question, if you've got a concern, we would love to hear from you. So before we get rolling, let me just give you a little bit of a table of contents, a little bit of a taste of some of the topics that we expect to get into, okay? We're going to talk about new car dealers, what to watch out for, things that you may encounter, what some of your rights are that you may not know about. Used car dealers, some of the same issues apply, and then others that are unique to them. Repair shops, lenders, applications that get filled out for credit in order to buy a motor vehicle. A lot of emerging issues with all of this. Dan is not only going to tell us what to watch out for, what happens if it turns out that your rights have been violated, and perhaps most importantly of all, ways that even if your claim appears to you to be modest, ways you still may be able to get a lawyer to represent you in court in a matter like this. So we're going to be doing all of that and answering your questions at 860-522-WTIC and toll-free from just about anywhere in the continental U.S., 1-800-966-WTIC. If on your device letters are not as easy as numbers, well, guess what? That's 860-522-9842. Toll free, it's 1-800-966-9842. So I'd be delighted to hear from you. Dan, let's jump in with new cars first. This is obviously a very, very important part of the economy. You know, tomorrow's the Super Bowl as we sit here recording this program today, and I'm guessing that we're going to see any number of car commercials in addition to all the rest. But tell me now, going and shopping for a new car, what are some of the things that we as consumers need to be especially careful about?
Well, when looking at a new car, I think that two things. Number one is you need to research the car and you need to research your financing. You should think a lot about exactly what it is you want to buy before you go to a dealership. Check things out. Look at various websites such as Edmunds.com to try to get some information as to what the true value of the car might be. Very few cars are sold for that new car sticker price.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people don't know that. They don't know that the prices of these cars are negotiable. The other thing that they may not know is that they can shop for financing on their own. And if somebody walks into a dealership and they've already applied for credit and they have approval, they're going to be in much, much better shape when they go to a car dealership, because about 75% of the bad things that can happen to people when they're in the back room signing the papers have to do with the financing. And if people take care of the financing on their own, then they're not going to be subjected to those types of scams. And they also are going to have an idea of what type of interest rate they can be approved for.
I think that's excellent advice. Before we go to the calls, because we've got one already that's right on topic, when you go in to purchase a new car and you have a car that you're interested in trading in towards that, is there an ideal time when you mention to them that, oh, I'm going to have a trade-in, or is that something that's better kept until later on in the process?
I don't have strong opinions as to the timing of that, but I think that what's really important is to get some idea of what that trade-in might be worth before you go to the car dealership, so that you'll have an understanding of what your options are. There is an advantage to trading a car into the dealership. Number one, it's very convenient. Number two is that you can save on your taxes if you own that car outright. Let's say it's the dealership's going to give you $5,000. And let's say it's a $30,000 car that you're buying, you only have to pay sales tax in Connecticut on that $25,000. So that's an advantage. The dealerships know about it. And sometimes they'll take advantage of it by not giving people anything close to what their car is worth. So it's worth exploring it. There are some dealerships that will give you a quote and offer to buy your car, whether you're buying a car from them or not. And I would suggest that you get a quote before you look into trading the car, and just so you know what your options are, and even just to use that other quote as leverage when you're doing your negotiation with the dealership.
That is the first of many pieces of valuable information that we're going to be handing out over the air this Saturday afternoon between now and 4. You can call us with your issue at 860-522-WTIC, 1-800-966-9842. First up, Chris in Farmington. Hi, Chris. You're on Law Talk.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
How can we help you out, Chris?
Well, I've got a situation. I bought a new truck in December, and it was sold as a new 2018. When I took delivery, there was no Monroney window sticker. There was no second key fob. There was no set of manuals. And they said, oh, they must be around here somewhere. So I followed up for weeks to say, well, can I get a build sheet? Can I get a sticker? You know, what's going on? And they suggested I call the manufacturer. So I called the manufacturer, and the manufacturer says to me, well, the vehicle has an in-service date of January 2019, not December 2019.
Uh-huh.
It was previously owned. Now, it only had, 80 miles on it, so that wasn't the issue. So then, I start looking at the paperwork, and sure enough, bottom line, and I'm embarrassed to even admit it, is in doing the deal, we had agreements on everything. They actually put in more payments than what I had agreed to verbally. So, okay, I signed the paperwork, and that can be an expensive mistake. I guess what I'm wondering, though, is is it really an expensive mistake if the vehicle was sold, you know, with an in-service date 10 and a half months prior to the actual deal?
Chris,
have any recourse with the dealer there?
It's an excellent question, and we're going to have Dan Blinn answer that. He's nodding knowingly through several parts of that. However, we're going to have to take a break just about now. So I'm going to ask you, can you hold on for a couple of minutes, and then we'll come back to that one as soon as we get through this break here.
Absolutely.
Okay, so hold on, please. Stay right where you are. And if you're listening to us, we'd be delighted to hear from you also. It's Law Talk. It is Saturday afternoon, and it's consumer law with a special emphasis on automotive issues, but anything else that involves consumers also, credit card issues, things of that sort. You reach us here at 860-522-WTIC, 1-866-1-800-966-WTIC. He stuttered. My guest, attorney Dan Blinn of Consumer Law Group in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. And we're going to come back and answer Chris's questions and yours right after this. Yeah, brand new Cadillac. All right. By special request from attorney Dan Blinn. Just before the break, we're talking with Chris in Farmington. Let us reintroduce ourselves. I'm attorney John Metulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. Dan is here as our guest. He is an expert on consumer law in general, especially in automotive law. We've been talking to Chris in Farmington, who's posed a problem for us, and now we're going to come back and answer it. Chris, are you still with us?
I am.
Great. Thanks for holding on. Dan's got several things to say about the different issues in the problem that you explained to us. Dan, you're up.
You know, Chris, when lawyers are in law school, one of the things that happens is in the law school exam, they give these fact patterns and the student gets graded on how many different issues they can spot. And your question really is like a law school exam for a consumer protection class.
We're almost up to two figures, aren't we?
there are a lot of things going on here. So the first thing that you mentioned that caught my eye was that this was purportedly a new car. And there was no Monroney sticker in it. And maybe we should explain what a Monroney sticker is. A Monroney sticker is the new car sticker that's put on the car by the manufacturer. And this is like those little tags that you have on a sofa. It says, do not remove under penalty of law. Well, you're actually allowed to remove them on your own sofa once it's in your house. But the furniture store is not allowed to remove it. And the same thing is true with these Monroney stickers. The dealership's not allowed to take that sticker off the car. It's only supposed to be removed by the first person who purchases it. And the fact that they don't have it is suggestive of the fact that this car was not really a new car. Now, the other thing that Chris mentioned that is that's significant is that the in-service date. Right, was in January of 2019, and he only bought the car in December. So it was almost a year before he bought it. Now, a car's in-service date runs from either the first time it's sold to another consumer, or it can also run when the dealership decides that they're going to start using this car as a demonstrator. And there are a lot of reasons why a dealership is going to decide to do that. Number one is it removes it from the inventory. It helps them in their relationship with the manufacturers because they're required to move a certain number of cars per year. So sometimes dealerships play games with that.
Yeah, it helps with their floor plan.
It does. And they're allowed to still sell these cars, but they're supposed to be selling them as demonstrators. There's a regulation in Connecticut that says that a dealership cannot sell a car as new unless it has not been driven beyond the number of miles that would be necessary for demonstration to prospective buyers. So a test drive or two is okay, but if you're giving this thing to people for an extended period, that doesn't work. Now, there are a couple things that may have happened. Number one, it might have been sold to a new consumer, and that deal might have not gone through because of problems with the credit application that consumer had. If that car was, in fact, delivered to somebody else, it really should have been listed and disclosed as a used car. Another issue is it could have been used by the dealership. And one thing I see a lot, Chris, when people buy new cars that have a fair amount of miles on it and it's been at the dealership for a really, really long time, is sometimes those cars have been in an accident. A surprisingly high percentage of vehicles that are in dealerships' inventory are crashed. And the reason why is because people driving them aren't familiar with the controls, and they're more likely to get into accidents than they are if they're driving their own car that they're very familiar with. And a lot of them are also driven by dealership employees, and sometimes these guys aren't the most careful drivers on the road. So it happens quite a bit. And I would, if I had a car under your circumstances, I would take it to an auto body shop or a mechanic that you trust and ask if there are any signs that this car's had any work done and has it been painted. Or something like that.
Dan, what's the significance in terms of warranty of this car having gone into service some 11 months earlier than Chris was led to believe?
Well, that's a great question. A fairly typical new car warranty might be for 36 months or 36,000 miles. And you got the car with 80 miles, so you're still going to have the coverage up to 36,000 miles. But that 36 months runs from January, not from the date that you bought that car. So you've been cheated out of
6 months or nine months.
Almost a full year of warranty, about a third of it, you know, depending upon how many miles you drive.
Normally
the manufacturer was shocked when they were the ones who told me, right? Because I was calling to look for a build sheet. The manufacturer was shocked at that news.
Mm-hmm.
Let's offer Chris a couple of suggestions. What might he be able to do?
Well, there's one more issue here that came up from this I'd like to get to. And that is that you mentioned that you saw when you looked over the paperwork that the number of monthly payments was different from what you had discussed with the dealership. And that is
it's embarrassing. I mean, I signed it.
Yeah, you did.
An expensive lesson. But, I mean, it was the type of thing that it's interesting. I mean, this is the seventh new car I've bought, right?
Yeah.
Here's your price. Here's your monthly payment for this many months, boom, boom, boom. And I know going back through this, there was never any mention of the term. And of course, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is, first of all, you shouldn't feel that badly about it.
Because you're not alone.
You are not alone. This happens with incredible frequency. And there are some dealerships, and I'm glad you haven't mentioned the one, and don't mention the dealership that you shopped at. Okay. But there are some dealerships that have, it's part of their business model to keep people waiting for a really, really long period of time. And then the finance managers who go through the paperwork are trained to brush them through. Sign here, sign here, sign here. They have their hands over the documents as they're pointing to people where to sign. Say, okay, this is just the paperwork. We want to get you out of here and on the road as soon as possible. And folks have no reason to feel suspicious that the deal that was described to them is going to be anything different than the deal that's on the paper. Because number one, people, their default is to believe that people are telling them the truth.
And they're awash in excitement.
They're awash in excitement. It's part of human nature. And also that most people aren't going to think that an established business with such a nice showroom, it's been there for so long and they're seeing these people on television advertising, that it's inconceivable that they're going to be engaging in fraud. But it happens all the time. And that's why it's really, really important for, and I'm glad you brought this up, Chris, because a lot of people can benefit from hearing this. It's really crucial to take your time and look over the paperwork very closely. Make sure there aren't any numbers on there that you don't understand. Because one of the other things that people are often very surprised to find out when they get home and they look at their paperwork is there are all kinds of extras on the contract that they knew nothing about and they didn't know that they were paying for it. And sometimes these extras can add thousands and thousands of dollars to the total cost of the car.
So now a person in Chris's position has discovered all of the things that Chris has discovered. What's next, Dan?
I think Chris should look for a lawyer who handles this type of thing, because there are a lot of claims here that I think could be pursued against this dealership.
Yeah. Chris, we're not going to get
You know, and I've talked to the, I will tell you, I called the dealership and, you know, when I mentioned that, hey, the deal wasn't what, hey, you signed a contract. Plain and simple. They don't want to know anything more. The guy did say, oh, we can throw you some more, I can throw you some more warranty. And I told him, I said,
Give you some car washes.
Oil changes. Anymore, so put it in an email. I followed up with an email. I followed up with another email. I'm not hearing anything back from these people. And it's a new car dealer. You know, they're part of an auto group. I sent into the auto group. Haven't heard anything. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. Just so you know, Dan's probably joining me in my recommendation that you should consult with an attorney who practices in this area. A lot of lawyers do not because it's somewhat specialized. But there are ways where the fraud can also result in not only some punitive damages, but also your attorney's fees being paid by the other side. That's an incentive for lawyers who know what they're doing in this area to say, yes, let's talk about this and let's see if we can help you out. Dan, did I get that right?
That's absolutely right. One of the features of consumer protection laws is that if a business violates the law, the business is going to be responsible to pay for those consumer fees. And the reason why those provisions are there is because these laws were written to be complied with. But the government really doesn't do much to enforce it. They rely upon private enforcement. And by making these attorney's fees available to the consumer, it provides an incentive to lawyers like us to accept these types of cases.
Yeah. Dan, we're going to have to, Chris, we're going to have to break in a minute, and Dan also. But Chris, by calling us and letting us discuss this, you've helped a lot of other people that are listening that may also have found that they've been taken advantage of or outright defrauded. And these are ways that these dealerships will stop doing it if people like you pursue the rights that you have. We're going to have to break shortly. If you want to hold on, we're going to have to do news, sports, and weather shortly, and we can pick up on the backside if you'd like. And if not,
that's
okay, too.
I just have one quick question.
Got to put you on hold, so hold on, please. Okay, you're listening to Law Talk, and we'll be back right after the news. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Law Talk on this Saturday afternoon. I'm attorney John Matulis. That was the Bobby Fuller for our long lost and not really lamented by too many, but it is our theme song. We don't fight the law. What we do is we try to explain it. And as we're doing today, we're going to try to teach you how to use it. What are we talking about? We're talking about the topic of the day, which is consumer rights and consumer law and things that can be done to try to right wrongs, both within the system and legally with lawyers, if you would like. So we've got a bunch of topics that are all related to consumer law, but mostly we're focusing on automotive, motor vehicle related issues. New car dealers, used car dealers, repair shops. You got problems with any of these? Lenders that have lent money? We want to hear about it. Also, if you are in any of these lines of work and you want to weigh in, delighted to hear from you also. 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-9842. Chris in Farmington, back to you shortly. Lynn in Southington, we'll get to you. Stan in Stores, hang on. We have a line or two open, and we're only here until 4 o'clock. So this is the time, if you've been listening or if you've got a question you need help with, you want to weigh in on an experience you've had, delighted to hear from you at those numbers. In the meantime, it's my obligation to let you know that if you need a lawyer and you don't have one, the Hartford County Bar Association operates a not-for-profit lawyer referral service. And we talk about this regularly because it's a good program. You call them on the phone number that I'm going to give you in a moment, and they'll ask you a couple of questions to determine the nature of your legal issue. You then get referred to an attorney who is experienced, who practices in the right discipline to help you out, has insurance, and is free of disciplinary entanglements. Okay? So what else do you get? Well, you get a half hour of that attorney's billable time. And whether that's over the telephone, whether it's face-to-face with the attorney, that's up to you and the attorney. After that half hour, no further obligation, no hard sell. If further legal services are requested, that's up to the two of you. If not, that's perfectly fine also. So this is how you access them. But before I tell you that, if you've got a personal injury claim and you call, there's no fee. We'll talk more about the fee in a second. If you've got a workers' compensation claim, there's no fee. We'll talk more about that in a second. If you've got a Social Security disability claim, same thing. Okay, so what's this about no fee? They charge a one-time only fee of $35, and it helps to underwrite the cost of the administrative expenses of the program. Phones, office space, personnel, and so on. Covers part of that, but not all of it. But if you call with one of those three categories, then they will waive the $35 fee. So here's how you access this program, okay? You call them at 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. It is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service at 860-525-6052. And recommend that you give it a try. It's a great way to get some help. Okay, back to topic. First of all, Chris, thanks for holding. You still with us?
I am.
Okay, now we were just finishing up your call, and you were good enough to hold on so we could take care of news and pay a couple of bills. I think you had one last part of your question that we hadn't quite gotten to, so take us up to speed here.
The one last question was, I had the DMV K-35 all ready to drop in the mail this morning, and then I heard about this program. Is it worth still sending that out, or consult an attorney first?
Dan?
I think you should do both. Filing the complaint with the Department of Motor Vehicles Consumer Dealer and Repair Division, I think, is important to do. My experience for this particular type of claim, they don't do much about. But I do think it's important to make those complaints. I do think that a private consultation with a lawyer is the way to go with your particular circumstances.
He's not going to run into any kind of a claim of failure to exhaust administrative remedies. So
not at all.
Okay, Chris, thank you for a very interesting multi-part question. And call us on a future show and let us know how this turns out, okay?
I will.
Okay, excellent. Take care. Bye now. Okay, our phone number is 860-522-WTIC, 1-800-966-9842. We're here until 4 o'clock. My guest, Attorney Dan Blinn from Consumer Law Group in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. Next up on the phones, Lynn in Southington. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for holding.
Hi.
Tell us how we can help you out, Lynn.
So I'm having a current issue with a dealership in New Britain. I had leased a car with them, I guess it was 3 years ago, and I turned the car in a few months late, but I had paid to extend the lease. And at that time, I was over mileage, but I was planning to lease another car, which I did. And we made a deal, if you will, to take that fee for the over mileage and roll it into the new lease. And that became part of the payment going forward. And that was in July of 2019. And now we are in February, and the dealership has still not paid that overage fee to, actually, Honda Financial Services. And I have left many messages with the person who I did the lease with. I've emailed. 2 weeks ago, I walked in personally to beg them to please take care of this. Spoke with the financial person there. He assured me that he was going to overnight a check that day. And here we are 2 weeks later and still nothing. And Honda Financial is calling me twice a day. My credit reports all have bad credit marks, all three of them, from Honda Financial for me not being able to pay. And I'm so frustrated. I don't know what else I can do to get them to do what they, you know, by our contract, promised to do.
Lynn, I'm sorry for your problems. Dan is nodding knowingly. So without another word from me, here's Attorney Blinn.
Thank you.
Hi, Lynn. So
hi.
I wrote a 9-part blog series about 3 years ago, and the title of it is Leasing Fleecing. And the short answer to this 9-part blog series is, yeah, in most cases it really is. I don't recommend it for a wide variety of reasons. And one of them is that it's very, very easy for dealerships to do something exactly like this. Leases are very complex and it's hard. I get lawyers who call me up and they don't understand their car lease. And if a lawyer doesn't understand it, then this is really too complex for consumers to be entering into. And with that complexity, it makes it very easy for dealerships to do things and the consumer has no idea what goes into it. And with the lease, the way that it's structured, there's a capital cost, and that's essentially equivalent to the cash price of the vehicle. And then there's the residual value, which is the amount that you can buy the car for at the end of the lease. And a big part of that monthly lease payment is the depreciation between that capital cost minus any pay down you made with initial payment and that type of thing. And that residual value, that's the depreciation. And that plus the rental fee, which is more or less like the interest that you would pay in a loan, is what makes up your lease payments. And what this dealership probably did was they gave a higher capital cost. In other words, they calculated the lease assuming that the car was worth more than it really is. And yes, your monthly payment is going to be higher as a result of that. And if you buy the car at the end of the lease, that you're going to wind up paying a little more for it at the end too. Mm-hmm. One key question I have is there anywhere in writing where they promised to pay off this over mileage that you owed for the old lease?
Yes.
Okay. So if you have it in writing, then I think that you've got a really solid claim against them. You've got mm-hmm. damages because they've hurt your credit. Mm-hmm. One thing that you can do, if you're able to, is to simply pay Honda yourself and then sue them in small claims court for whatever it was that you had to pay and to include a claim to compensate you for the harm that was done to your credit. It's possible, if you talk to the finance company and you explain it to them, if you give them a copy of what this dealership did and that you were relying upon them, they might agree to take off any negative credit reporting that they made.
And well, they already told me that the dealership was going to have to put in writing that it was their responsibility and not mine before they removed anything.
But you said a minute ago that you have in writing their promise to do it. So you already mm-hmm. have that.
Right.
So you should give them a copy of what you already have.
Okay.
Okay. And by the way, good for you for making the dealership put the promises in writing. That's really something that's important to do. When a dealership makes you a promise, ask them to write it down.
Yeah. Everybody mm-hmm. who's listening, pay attention. That's a real good point. Okay. Dan, we're going to have to break for a minute in commercials, but should we ask Lynn to hold on for a second and give her a little more focused advice to what she may be able to do or how she may be able to get some help to deal with this?
Sure.
The hit on a credit report is important. Okay. Lynn, are you willing to hold on for just a minute while we take care of some commercials here and then we can give you a little more assistance on the backside?
Sure.
Thanks. Hold on, please. Okay, you're listening to Law Talk. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. My guest today, Attorney Dan Blinn, founder and owner of Consumer Law Group in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. We're here until 4 o'clock, and we're going to be back right after this. Or if you're the dealer, maybe not. Hi, welcome back to Law Talk. I'm Attorney John Matulis. My guest, Attorney Dan Blinn from Consumer Law Group in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. Topic du jour, consumer rights in general, and we've been dealing with the motor vehicle industry, automobiles, trucks, new car dealers, used car dealers, repair shops, lenders. We're going to finish up with Lynn in Southington, and let's go back to Lynn. Are you still with us, Lynn?
Yes, I am.
Thanks for holding on over that break there. And I think Dan's got a couple more words that might put a little more focus on what we've discussed so far for your situation. Dan, go right ahead.
Lynn, the types of complaints that you're talking about are the types of things that I found that can frequently be addressed by waging a social media campaign against the dealership. They don't like negative reviews more than any other type of business does. And complaints to the Better Business Bureau and the like can be effective. I would also make sure that the owner of this dealership knows what's going on and the fact that you're becoming increasingly upset about this delay to the point that you called a call-in radio show to mm-hmm. discuss it. I think that it's probably just a matter of stalling rather than an intent to actually cheat you out of it. And if they realize that this is going to become a bigger problem for them, then I suspect that they're probably going to do the right thing.
Dan, one last thought for Lynn. Does it ever make sense to find out who the owner or the president is and contact that person directly and say to him or her, in writing. This is the experience I've had. These are the promises your people have made repeatedly, and here I am. And is this the way that you run business? Does it ever help to do something like that?
It really depends upon the dealership. One of the reasons why I suggested this to Lynn is that she gave us enough information that I have a pretty good idea who this dealer is.
Yeah.
And it is a dealership that has a hands-on owner that I think is concerned about this type of thing. And I think he would want to know about this problem.
So, Lynn, we've got several suggestions for you there. We're sorry about your problems, but hopefully some of this will be helpful, and hopefully it'll help with a couple of these things you've experienced as a result of somebody not keeping their word to you.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, thanks. And let us know on a future show how it turned out for you. Okay, Lynn?
Will do.
Excellent. Thanks for the call. Okay, Dan, we've got about 7 or 8 minutes left and so much more things we can talk about. Let's go back to the financial setting. New car, used car, I don't know if it matters a lot, but somebody's in the car dealership, they've picked out the car, now it's time to apply for financing. A couple of parts to John's question to Dan here. Number one, what are some things to watch out for? And number two, if after the fact you think you've been, to use a legal term, schnookered, okay, term of art, what might one do? So take it from there.
Sure. Well, one of the things we talked about right at the beginning of the show is I recommend that people shop for financing away from the dealership before they even think about talking to a car dealer about a specific car. I think that it's important that people know what they can be approved for, what rate they can get. And that can also help them make an intelligent decision about how much car they can afford to buy.
It's great advice.
Yeah. And car dealers will frequently mark up the interest rate. What they do is they work with a number of finance companies and banks. And when you complete an application at a car dealership, most dealerships use a electronic system that enables them to submit that information to a whole bunch of different places. And frequently they're going to place you with the bank, not the one that's going to get you the best possible interest rate, but the one that's going to be most profitable for the dealership to assign to.
Because they get paid for the so-called service they provide in putting this loan together.
They do. The banks and finance companies work directly with car dealers, and they don't have to advertise for those loans, so they give some compensation to the dealers. Now, an exception to that is for folks that don't have good credit, the so-called subprime market.
Okay.
And in those instances, it's actually the opposite, where let's say somebody is buying a $20,000 car, they have $5,000 to put down, they have to borrow $10,000. The bank might say, well, you've got this paper to pay $10,000, and I'll give you $7,000 for it. And the reason why they're only going to pay $7,000 for this $10,000 obligation is because the person's credit is such that they think that the risk is too high to pay the full $10,000. Connecticut, like most states, has a maximum interest rate that can be charged on used cars. That's 19%. And if they feel
such a bargain,
well it's mm-hmm. it's astronomically high, of course. But they may feel that because of the risk of this particular consumer, that they would want to charge 27% or something like that. So they have a discount that they
apply to it. Yeah, the greater the risk, the greater the cost that they're entitled to charge.
So for a car dealer to sell a car to somebody like that, what they've got to do is they've got to mark up the price.
Okay.
So they jack up the price, and depending upon how it's done and whether they've advertised the car for a lower price, that might be a violation of the law.
So let me throw out a term that I just learned recently in this, and that's power booking. Mm-hmm. So tell me what that means in the context of what we're discussing here, because I think our listeners need to know about this.
Sure. Power booking is when a car dealership, when they're submitting a loan application to a bank, will misrepresent how the car is equipped. Let's say the actual car is a Nissan Sentra that was a former rental. It's a base model. Former rental cars may be manufactured slightly differently than other cars that are sold through dealerships. They sometimes have cheaper carpet and other things, cheaper speakers.
But it's going to be a very basic car. It's not going to have a lot of high-cost, high-value options.
Right. And when the application is submitted to a bank, they might say that this car has navigation, it has a CD changer, it has a power sunroof, it has leather seats, when in reality it doesn't have any of those things. So the bank says, wow, this car is worth $25,000, so I'll loan $25,000 on that. You know, you can charge them up to $25,000, when in reality that car might only be worth about $16,000 or $17,000.
So how does that affect the borrower?
Well, they might wind up owing $25,000 on a car that's only $16,000, only worth $16,000.
So they're going to be upside down almost immediately.
Right, and it also impacts the bank because they're going to be severely under-collateralized. They think that they've got this car that's collateral for the loan that's going to cover that obligation if the car has to be repossessed.
And they might start looking to that borrower and start saying, well, maybe somebody defrauded us here.
Yeah, and this is a very, very common type of credit application fraud. We see it in a tremendous percentage of the files we look at.
We've got time for only one more call, and we're going to do that right now, okay? So let's go to Joanne in Windsor Locks. Hi, Joanne. We're just going to get your call in, so tell us how we can help you.
Okay. Is it better to pay cash instead of taking out a loan to buy a car?
Well, we'll turn to Dan Blinn, and he'll tell us more about that, Joanne.
Thank you.
Well, if you have the cash, then it's probably better to pay cash. A lot of times when you're financing the car, there are going to be extra expenses that are going to be charged. A lot of banks charge something called VSI, which is a type of insurance, vendor single interest insurance that protects the bank's interest, but doesn't do anything for the consumer. Usually it's better to pay cash, and it's a much cleaner deal when you're negotiating with the dealer.
Yeah, and Joanne, in our present interest climate, where money in the bank earns 0 point next to nothing for interest, it's probably more sensible to use some of that money that's earning 0 point next to nothing in interest for a cash purchase to save all those extra costs Dan's referring to.
Good point. Thank you.
Hope it's helpful. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for answering.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Well, we've got about a minute left. And before we wrap up, I wanted to just see what else can we say in general to people that discover after the fact they've been, as we use that term of art before, taken advantage of?
Well, I do think that the first thing that somebody should do is to discuss it with the dealership and see if you can work out something that's reasonable. And if the dealership isn't willing to make things right, then it can be worth talking to an attorney. And most of the attorneys who do this type of thing will give an assessment of the case without charging anything. And most cases that can be brought without charging the consumer much. And many times we can take the case without charging the consumer anything for fees.
And from my perspective, that's one of the most valuable things that a listener would learn from this program today, because this is consumer protection litigation. There are protections for the consumers, including having your attorney's fees paid. And so keep that in mind if you find that you're in the category we've been discussing. Well, that music means it's time for me to say my thank yous. Thank you, first of all, to everybody who's called in and allowed us to help you out on the air, because by doing so, you've allowed us to help others. Thanks to the rest of you that are listening, because you're the reason that we do the program. Special thanks from my guest and my friend, attorney Dan Blinn, for joining us once again and sharing his expertise with all of us. Thanks to someone that's here that you didn't hear from. That's attorney Linda Blinn, who's got headphones on, but no microphone, and she's been keeping an eye on Dan. I'm attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. We do this Saturday afternoons. This is your program, and if you've got an idea for topics, please let us know. In the meantime, time for me to say, see ya.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely in decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.